inverted compliment? I am forced to say that this appears to be an idiom I have yet to learn.
Well, what would you say if I told my wife that she was an ugly little monkey?
Tira looked startled. But the princess is taller than I and beautiful. I have never seen a monkey, but pictures of them look not at all like the princess.
He called me that just a couple of days ago, Tira. It pleased me. Meant that, in his opinion, I was the exact opposite. An inverted compliment.
Oh, I must think about this.
When we arrived at the bathing room, the 8 wood nymphs were there ahead of us, with supper set up by the pool. I was forced to assume that either A, there was a shortcut passageway and that I had incorrectly visualized the complex layout of that huge apartment, or B, Barsoomians had solved the problem of instantaneous transitions by my method or some other. Then I thought of conveyor belts and forgot the matter. Kissa started undressing me while Tika started popping goodies into my mouth. Kissa hesitated with her hands on the buckle of my Sam Brown, looked at Tira. She said,
Dr. Burrows, she cannot remove your sword without specific permission. Just place your hand on her head, Doctor. That grants a slave permission to do anything she's unsure about.
I did so. Kissa studied the buckle, then opened it. I remembered to take out my automatic, remove the clip, and jack the cartridge out of the chamber. Couldn't have the child shooting her foot off by accident. While I did this, she removed my shorts, and I made an involuntary start of surprise. From behind me, Zeb drawled,
Jake, were you ever in a bathhouse in Japan?
No.
But you mentioned taking Finnish sauna.
Relax and enjoy it.
Or think about Gödel's proof or Fermat's last theorem. I did all of those things, especially when they combined forces to lather me all over.
Yes, I relaxed and enjoyed it.
Dee Dee gets her own way. She asked when the girls ate, was told that slaves ate after their masters, whatever was left. So Dee Dee started shoving bites into Larlo and Fig, who squealed and tried to avoid it, and gave in when Dee Dee got Tira to order them to permit it. The same thing happened after we were rinsed and got into the pool, just under body temperature, just deep enough that Hilda's head was above water. Luxurious. Our servants lay by the pool and continued to feed us. Dee Dee insisted that they come in, too.
Tira looked startled.
Dee Dee made it a flat order.
I have never seen 9 women lather and rinse each other so fast. In fact, I have never seen 9 women do it slowly, either.
Sharing that pool with 11 beautiful women is something out of Muslim paradise. I relaxed and enjoyed it.
Our apartment was 2 wings with that living room great hall at its center.
2 sleeping rooms in each wing. Tira took it for granted that we would each select a sleeping room. I kept quiet, knowing that Hilda and I would wind up in the same room, Zeb and Dee Dee in another. Goodness, you could have bedded down a platoon in one of them.
Dee Dee is not one to let matters be. Where do you and the girls sleep?
Wherever we are told to sleep, princess. Unless you tell them to do otherwise, Larlo and Fig will sleep outside your door, with one ear open should you call. Or, if you wish them nearer, they will sleep at your feet so that a whisper will suffice should you wake and wish to be massaged back to sleep, at which they are skillful. Or to fetch you food or drink. They are here to carry out your wishes, whatever they may be. If they do not understand, I will appear at once to translate. I will be in the foyer, close to all 4 rooms.
Didi looked thoughtful. My wife said, "Let me get this straight. Two each. Labba and Kona with me, outside my door or at my feet. And the same for our chieftains, to carry out their wishes, whatever they may be. Just how far does that go? Spell it out, Tira."
Tira looked perplexed.
"I do not understand, Princess Hilda. Each slave will do whatever her lord or lady requires. If she does not understand, she will call me. I will explain, or do it myself if it is beyond her skills. If it is a wish unanticipated that I cannot solve, I will send a swift message by a watchman of the night, and Navok will solve it. Does the princess have some special wish in mind?"
"No, just asking." Hilda looked at me, looked at Kissa and Tika, looked back at me.
"Jacob, is your insurance paid up?"
I said, "Why, Hilda, my love, Tira meant nothing of the sort, I'm certain."
"Zebby, are you going to risk your life, too?"
"Sharpie, knock it off. I'm sleeping with Diti."
Tira looked puzzled and distressed. "I do not understand. Have I, in my ignorance, offended my masters and mistresses?"
Diti put an arm around Tira's waist. "Not a bit, Tira. You've been grand. My Aunt Hilda loves to tease." It wound up as I knew it would. Hilda and me in one room, Zeb and my daughter in the other sleeping room in that wing, and our Girl Scout troop bedded down in a sleeping room beyond the big parlor, along with their troop mistress. We had trouble getting Tira to accept this arrangement. It took, I tell you, 3 times to make it stick. Once the 8 Giggleheimers were chased off to bed and out of earshot, we all gathered in Hilda's and my room for a nightcap. 5. We included Tira. Each sleeping room held a low, round chow bench loaded with wines and midnight snacks. And I'm blessed if I know when the girls found time to place this, as these benches had been bare when we took the grand tour. Sent in from outside, certainly, and I admit I did not muster them every 10 minutes. Tira, maybe. She seemed to be triplets in her ability to handle many things at once. Hilda at once exercised her prime talent.
"Tira, knock off this slave nonsense. The girls are out of earshot. You can pick it up again whenever someone else is around. We don't want to put any strain on you. But you're our substitute hostess, and we are your guests and friends. Friends, if you will let us be."
"Yes, Princess, thank you."
"Try that again. Just say, 'Sure, Hilda. Why not?'"
"Sure, Hilda. Why not?"
"Better, but your heart isn't in it yet. My husband, Dr. Burroughs, is called Jake by his friends, not Jacob. That's my name for him. Say, 'Howdy, Jake.'"
"Howdy, Jake."
"Just fine, Tira. If you'll smile and show those dimples," I answered. Tira can blush, too, but I got those dimples. "And I'm Diti, Tira, darling, and I want you to love me."
"No one could fail to love the Princess Sorry. Diti, you're awfully easy to love. You're friendly and warm. All the girls felt it. They told me so. Larlo and Fig were disappointed not to be allowed to sleep at your feet."
"Well, I'll try to soothe their feelings tomorrow."
22. Zebediah. When I woke, Didi was missing. The last I remember, she was clinging like a koala bear and sound asleep. The room was dark, but as I yawned and stretched, tall drapes were silently swept aside and I was looking out into bright sunshine. The door opposite the tall windows opened. Ajal and Wogi entered silently, bearing trays. They curtsied in unison. I said, "Cower kids? Wogi? Ajal?"
"Cower Captain Zebadiah John Carter,"
they sang in chorus. "Good girls, thank you. Someone has been training them. Tira?" They smiled happily, rushed toward me, dropped to their knees, started assaulting me with hot, perfumed towels. I relaxed to the inevitable. They gave me a bed bath with gentle efficiency and dried me. Wogi then poured a few cc of amber liquid into a tumbler, raised it to her lips, and waited, eyes on mine. I placed a hand on her head. She smiled, poured it into her mouth, gargled gently, closed her lips, and worked her mouth and jaw around, forcing the liquid through her teeth. She spat it daintily into a small basin. Then she poured a larger amount and offered it to me. I did everything she had done. Fresh, spicy, non-alcoholic, and beat the hell out of Listerine, Lavoris, or Cepacol. Finished swishing it through my teeth and spat it into the basin. It not only freshened my mouth, but also those slimy little sweaters were gone from my teeth. This planet didn't need toothbrushes. I had to restrain them to keep them from following me into the Jakes. When I came out, Ajal was holding my sword and belt. Wogi had my police special in one hand, cartridges in the other. I had ejected them before letting them bathe me the night before, and my walkie-talkie hanging from the crook of that elbow. I took the walkie-talkie, flipped it on, said, "Dee Dee, come in, Dee Dee." No answer. I put the button in my ear, stepped it up to full gain, held the mic to my throat. "Come in, Dee Dee. Come in, anybody." "Dee Dee isn't here!" I hastily turned down the gain. "Both the gals are gone. I'm on the balcony outside the ballroom, Zeb. How do you like your eggs?" "Cower, Jake. Up and easy. You aren't going to get any. Eggs are taboo on this planet. But you won't starve. Come on out." "Okay. Over and out." I placed the walkie-talkie, gun, and ammo on the chow bench. It had been cleared off. Pixies again. Ajal was holding my sword belt open and looking expectant. I touched the top of her head. She smiled and buckled it around me, hooked up my sword wrong way. I rehooked it, but assured her that she was a good girl. Told Wogi the same. Looked around for my shorts. No pants. Well, the girls were wearing none. I was getting used to it. I went out, my staff in formation with me. No, I wasn't going to starve. Jake had finished eating. What was left would make a Thanksgiving dinner for a dozen. My girls started feeding me. Hot bites, cold bites, a hot drink that wasn't coffee but was bracing, a cold one that looked like milk but had a vanilla flavor. Every time I started to speak, something wound up in my mouth. I caught Wogi by the wrist. "Jake, how do you avoid too much service?" He spoke one word. My girls poised for flight, waited. I patted each on the head. "Good girls." They left, went outside, sat down on the floor tailor fashion, or was it lotus, where they could see me. Clearly, they had understood Jake's order, but their master had to confirm it. "I see you're learning the lingo, Doc."
6 words. I had Tira's help. "When you are through eating, call your kids and let them take it away. Tira and her campfire girls won't eat until you are through."
I thought we had settled that nonsense.
Only in private. I'm not sure Dee Dee and Hilda should have crowded it, even in private. People always prefer their own time-tried customs. Were you ever an enlisted man?
No,
I was. Only weeks, but long enough to get the flavor. Enlisted men don't like officers who insist on getting chummy. Tira is a slave, but an important slave, one who takes pride in her status and her perfect service. Didn't you notice last night that she got upset in trying to play the role of member of the family?
Yes, I had, but I had confidence in Dee Dee's ability to make it work.
Give it a day or two. Jake, you worry too much. I do worry. I'm worried now, three ways. No, four. Pop, you'll burn out your bearings. Here you are, looking down at the most beautiful garden this side of Vancouver Island, belching over a sybaritic breakfast, living in luxury with nine beautiful servants waiting breathlessly for your least whim, and you worry. Man, even if they are planning to hang you at sunset, you should enjoy this day. They might hang us at sunset. All the more reason to enjoy your last day. Maybe you're right, Zeb. I am right. But what's this about hanging at sunset? Zeb, how long will our lies stand up? My lies, you mean? They've stood us in good stead so far. Would you rather be out in the middle of the Bay of Blood, I think Tom Takis called it, eating peanut butter sandwiches and trying to make up your mind between sleeping sitting up with your ankles swelling or risking frostbite and hungry bats outside? Look, Doctor, with your get there zip gadget, we can leave this planet later today if you like. I think I can fast-talk our friends out of some fast thoats. Or Joe and his flyer. Might be smart. Why this attack of nerves? They've got power here. Whether it's AC/DC or Simon Says Wiggle Waggle, I can figure a way to juice Gay Deceiver. And while the evidence indicates that women's dress shops are scarce, they have cloth from which Dee Dee and Hilda can whip up clothes for Hilda. You can't expect her to explore umpteen universes with one cotton dress and a borrowed pair of panties. Count your blessings, man. This is that fitting out base we were too rushed to use back home. Give me time to look over the facilities. They have technicians. It's just not our technology. Damn it. I get annoyed at cold feet and never expected Jake to fall ill with them. Where did the girls go? I don't know. Princess Thuvia. Oh, shut up and listen, son. I slept late. They were gone. Tira told me that the Princess Thuvia, consort of the regent, had come and taken them away. That's all she seemed to know. But Tira seemed to think everything was jolly, so I tried not to show any misgivings. But we can't tell what danger they might run into. Zeb, was that string of lies necessary? What lies? Think it over, Doc. You aren't related to the warlord. Who says I'm not? Jake, I gave my correct name, rank, and serial number. They can check it in my flight log. My passport shows, in Gay Deceiver now, where I was born. Virginia. I never said that we were close relatives. I distinctly said distant. What relations are you to Edgar Rice Burroughs? Why, none that I know of. Do you know that you are not? If you were alive and claimed to be your fifth cousin twice removed, could you disprove it? No, but a simple no will do. It is statistically probable that you are more closely related than that. However, most American family records are neither complete nor assembled. But I am certain of one thing. My name isn't phony, and I have proof. If the warlord is using a phony name, he won't be anxious to throw doubt on my credentials. He'll accept me as his distant cousin, treat me as such, and never open his peeper. Contrarywise, if John Carter is his right name, I have no reason to doubt it. The odds that we are cousins of some sort are so high that he'll accept it. He has no reason to make an issue of it, not after we've been accepted as guests in his palace. Zeb, in those books, the warlord says time and again that he doesn't remember when or where he was born. Jake, we're not in a book. We're in a balcony, overlooking a beautiful garden, in a palace on the fourth planet from the sun in Universe 10. The palace belongs to a bloke with my surname, and we were born in the same state. Fact. Any discrepancies result from an excited green man who doesn't speak English too well making a garbled report to his boss who is a blithering idiot, and who then relayed that report, with more garbling you can be certain, to the palace. The essentials got through. My name, rank, and place of birth. All else is irrelevant. What about that garbage you told about me? What garbage? You are a veteran of the Pentagon. Well, you don't have to rub it in. Emperor of Ruritanis, my God! Jake, you've got the twitches over nothing. None of that got on the air. Think back. Three green men heard it, no one else. And not one of them knows Ruritania from rural Pennsylvania. Not that it would matter. Didi has Catch-Catch-Can eating out of her hand. He would kill anyone who said a word against her. Sharpie seems to have done as good a job on Tom Takis. She did. I don't know how she does it. There are no flies on Hilda. We won't slip up through her. Wherever she is, right now, she's taking someone into camp. Jake, your lovable little wife can fast-talk a touchy situation better than I can. You hear her yesterday? You got yourself a prize, Jake. I know it. And so did I, and I know it. Our wives are our major assets. But before you moan about a little fast-talk, mine or Hilda's, you might try thinking about why we were fast-talking it. You did some shooting. Why? Because. Jake shut up. Because Hilda appeared to be in danger. But an old-style automatic is no good at that range. Just luck you didn't kill your wife. I'm not blaming you. We were all doing our best in a sticky situation. I wasn't effective either, until it penetrated my panic that it was time to talk, not fight. Then I talked. Some was garbage, I admit. Let me rehearse it next time and I won't mention the Pentagon. Hadn't realized you feel touchy about it. But I was extemporizing, trying to save our necks. I wasn't calm. Nervous isn't too strong a word. Captain, I apologize. Oh, dreck, we're too close for apologies. We've shared too many dangers. Blood brothers. Jake, what are you really worried about?
Zeb, this isn't Barsoom.
So, have they changed its name since yesterday?
But Barsoom isn't a real place. It's just in a story, like Oz.
I ate a Barsoomian grape. No seeds, and big as a plum. So it's in a story, and it turned out to be real. You want to sue?
No, I want a hypothesis to account for it.
You sound like a philosopher. Jake, theories are a dime a dozen and causation is a myth. But if you want a theory, slip this one on for size. Edgar Rice Burroughs, or maybe John Carter, since Burroughs insisted that he simply recorded what was handed to him, somebody, call him X, found a way to reach, not Mars, but Barsoom on Universe 10, Tau Axis. We know it's possible, but we did. But someone else did too and beat us to it. Shucks. We know American Express beat us to it, but John Carter got here even sooner. Does that theory fit?
This Barsoom isn't quite like the one in those classic romances. Similar, but not the same.
What of it? It wouldn't be the first time the reporter slanted his story. My theory covers all data, I think. Got a better one?
Well, no.
My theory is pure hogwash, Jake, whipped up as fast as the stuff I was shoveling yesterday. Why don't you stick to what you are best at?
Eh?
You've told me, and I believe it, that you are one of the new breed of mathematical physicists who doesn't worry about what ought to be. A meaningless concept, you said, and I agree, but instead attempts to invent mathematics to describe the real world as you see it. This is a real world we are in. Our bellies are full. We've got 9 girls getting hungry while we've been yakking. We should be ashamed. Hey, Wogie. Hey, Jal. My little shadows came zipping out. Sign language sufficed. They cleared things off like a prairie fire, leaving us each a cup of uncoffee. Good girls, I called after them. Jake, your genius for inventing new math gave us the key to the universes, an unthinkable number of them, the number of the beast. Now we find that one of them matches, or almost, what we had both thought of as a fictional universe. If this planet had been utterly unfamiliar, neither of us would have boggled. Instead, you are moaning because it's too familiar. Can't you devise a sheaf of postulates to include this Barsoom? If you can, will your description also fit other universes we've always thought of as fiction? Some might turn out to be as real as this Barsoom. I don't say all of them. That's too much to ask. But some. Atlantis. Doc Smith's gray lensman. Can you write equations for a few? Jake said slowly, I can write equations for all of them. Hey, I didn't ask to buy the store. I'll settle for a few.
Zeb, I've been sitting here thinking about three theories. One, I was killed in that explosion in the parking lot, and this is where I wound up. A dying dream, or possibly another life.
No, Doc. That may fit you, it doesn't fit me.
I anticipated your objection. The second theory is solipsism.
Solipsism is a cop-out, Jake. It explains everything and nothing. Nor can I buy your solipsism. It's gotta be mine.
Yes, that's the weakness of solipsism. Ever hear the theory that in endless time and space, not only everything can happen, but has happened and will happen?
Mathematically, it is equivalent to Cantor's Alephs, or higher infinities, and contains the same fallacy. But a brilliant writer named Brown wrote a fine story about it.
Frederick Brown's What Mad Universe. Yes, I know that book, Jake. A classic. You say it contains a fallacy? I was impressed by its logic.
I didn't say the story contained a fallacy. I said that the mathematical theory contained a fallacy. Mr. Brown's story may be utterly real, is real, if the formulation I've been thinking about has any merit.
Go ahead.
Zeb, the most powerful concept in modern physics is the quantum. The longer it is studied, the more we find out about how nature ticks. Discrete units everywhere we look. World has texture. That texture is quantum mechanics. All I did was to extend that notion of smallest units and applied it to closed space. And we started making quantum jumps. Suppose human thought exists in discrete and smallest, not divisible units.
I'm not sure I follow you.
Tisn't necessary yet. I haven't tried writing it down. Or ever necessary, as you tell me you don't follow the math we used to come here.
I don't. It works. I'm not a worrier as to why it works.
Well, if human thought or imagination exists in quants, then every conceivable universe lies somewhere in the number of the beast. A very large number. So large as not to be physically countable. Just written. But still a number. Not infinity. Zeb, if thought is quantized, every story ever told or to be told, same idea in closed continua, is real. Gulliver's Travels, Travis McGee, The Wizard of Oz, Barsoom, Wagner's Ring Cycle, doesn't matter. Room for all of them. And we may find ourselves in any of them. Although it is a high improbability that we will, in one lifetime, happen to hit another that we recognize as being a fiction story in the universe we were born in, although we might. A basic law of statistics is that the extremely unlikely is as real as the humdrum almost certain.
I'd better stick to the left seat while you twist the verniers. You said you were worried about a fourth thing.
Yes. Pregnant women. On a planet that doesn't use obstetrics.
23. Jake.
Zeb and I were still lazing on the balcony when a gong sounded. Zeb's talk, and even more, his presence, had done me a world of good. I'm a warrior. Zeb is not. I don't mean that Zeb is happy-go-lucky. He's not. There is an old prayer that goes something like this. God grant me the strength to cope with troubles I can solve, the serenity to endure those I cannot solve, and the wisdom to know the one from the other. The wording is not exact, and I don't know who first said it. Zeb Carter seems to have been born knowing it, but he wouldn't phrase it that way. Zeb would be more likely to say, "Don't bang your head against a stone wall," he might add. "Climb over, go around, tunnel under, knock a hole in it, and if nothing works, forget it. Change your plans, or take a nap, but don't get ulcers." I had gotten up, fretful, because I've come to expect Hilda to be within arm's reach, or not too far away to call. But I woke in a strange place and she was gone, and I got up so suddenly that I omitted my morning ritual of
talking with Jane. A mistake. So I fretted. Instead of savoring the most lavish breakfast I have ever seen, solipsism, for heaven's sake, God invented people to amuse him because he didn't have television. That makes just as much sense. The world of experience is the only reality undefined term I know. So that was the one to cope with. Zeb reduced our problems to two practical ones. One, how best to outfit for more travel, and B, find a friendly planet with skilled obstetricians, if possible, during the first trimester of our darlings. All else was either irrelevant or must be tabled for later, including blokes in black hats with double-hinged legs and green blood. Meanwhile, whenever I had time, I could think about the elegant notion of trying to apply quantum mechanics to human imagination. Is there somewhere, when, a seacoast Bohemia? Is Dorothy walking the yellow brick road with companions as grotesque and as friendly as Catch-Catch-Can and Canacook? Does Huck Finn float down an endless Mississippi with imposters as preposterous as we? Is Alan Quatermain exploring the mountains of the moon? The gray lensman righting galactic wrongs? Is the Mad Tea Party going strong? With, of course, the best butter. When, where will Wotan sell one eye that the human race may flourish? What verniers must I touch? What translations, what rotations to find the once and future king seated opposite Siege Perilous with his knights in circle around him? What of 221B Baker Street and the house on West 35th? Did Major Edgar Allan Poe go south in 61? Or did his West Point indoctrination cause him to die fighting for damn Yankees? Either way, did he find time to write the loveliest lyrics since Shakespeare? Does Kuka Shan dream of her restless barbarian in company with Dido and poor Butterfly in some land no farther away than a twist of my dials? My mind was buzzing happily with new symbols and an urge to manipulate them as equations when that gong broke my recovery. Tira hurried in out onto the balcony, started to drop into full prostration, caught herself, curtsied, started a rush of words. The Prince Regent commands. Stopped, stuttered, and started over, saying most carefully while staring straight ahead, Prince Cart Horus sends this inquiry to Captain Zebediah John Carter of Virginia. Is this a convenient time for him to call on his senior cousin, or should he try again some later time? Zeb said, Take it easy, Tira. Nobody's going to bite you. Certainly, this is as good a time as any. I interrupted before she could back away. Did the prince want to see me, or does he want to speak to the captain alone?
The Prince Regent did not mention the distinguished doctor. I cannot answer your question. I do not know.
Zeb said, Stick around, Jake. He'll see us both. I'll do the talking, unless you feel like chucking in something. I mean, I'm willing to carry the ball. Tira, send word to my cousin that he's welcome. How soon can we expect him?
Captain, he's right outside your doors.
Oh, go let him in. Come on, Jake, we'll meet our guest at the door. Instead of taking off like an arrow, Tira stammered again.
Captain, must I curtsy?
Oh, honey, chill, do whatever makes you feel easiest. Now scoot. She scooted. As we reached the foyer, the big doors started to open and a voice boomed,
The Prince Regent!
A handsome, well-built young red man came in. He was wearing plain leather, no ornaments, but his belt buckle was shaped in the sigil of the warlord. He was wearing a sword, no other weapons.
"Sorry about that," he said, grinning. "I told them no protocol. I'm Cart Horus."
He glanced at each of us.
"Senior cousin?"
Zeb stepped forward, stuck out his hand.
"I'm Zeb Carter."
The prince shook hands.
"I'm happy to meet you, senior cousin. Our home is yours."
"Thanks, prince. In the family, I'm called Zeb. This is my father-in-law, Dr. Burroughs." Cart Horus bowed to me.
"I'm honored, distinguished doctor."
I stuck out my hand instead of bowing back.
"My name inside our family is Jake, your Imperial Highness."
"Doctor, I'd be most pleased to be treated as a member of your family, as well as Zeb's and mine, and call you Jake, if you'll knock off the fancy titles with me. I'm called Cart at home, except that my mother uses my full name. However, she named me."
He grinned again, a most engaging grin. He was smooth-shaven, if red men had beards. I wasn't sure.
"Cart it is," I agreed, as Zeb urged us all inside.
Tira was still face down, knees drawn under her, motionless. Cart Horus glanced at her.
"Zeb, she won't stir until you tell her to. I can't tell her. She belonged to my mother until mother gave her to you."
Zeb leaned down, patted Tira's head. "Get up, Tira, and say hello to the prince." Tira got to her feet like an opening flower, stood with downcast eyes.
"This humble one is deeply honored to be permitted to greet the prince regent."
"Tira," Cart Horus said mildly. "That wasn't what your master told you to say. He said for you to say hello to the prince."
She raised her eyes, said solemnly,
"Hello, prince."
"Howdy, Tira."
"Zeb, servants are deucedly conservative. You and I and Jake can dispense with protocol. But they won't."
"Tira has known me many cycles. She is a member of our family in all but rank. But she insists on doing that full salute dozens of times each day, as if the ink were still wet on her contract. No way to stop her. Won't get up without permission."
"We stopped her, Cart," said Zeb.
"What? How? Tell me your secret."
"Tira had special permission from me to prostrate herself to you. But with us, we substituted a simpler salute used in Virginia. Tira, please curtsy to the prince." Her eyes widened, but she bobbed up and down at once.
"See?" Zeb went on. "It's like giving a hand salute instead of bothering to draw a sword. Means the same, but quicker and more convenient. Saves time, both for you and your servant. Since your servant's time is yours, it doubly saves your time."
"By Issus, that's clever. I must tell Mother. Mother is always looking for better ways to do things.
You say this is common in Virginia?"
"Yes."
Zeb didn't tell him that servants were no longer common. "Then my father is familiar with the custom. We can have every servant in the palace trained in it before he gets back, using it, except for visiting Jeds and Jeddaks, I think."
"May I make a suggestion, Cart?" I put in.
"The distinguished doctor,
Jake, your words of wisdom are welcome always."
"This isn't wisdom, but it may be common sense. How many servants are there in the palace?"
"Tira?"
2,188 last 10-day muster, Highness. The free citizens employ—"
"Never mind those. So many? No wonder Mother mutters over the grocery bills.
Cart, how many are habitually in contact with royalty, or with nobility, or any others to whom they prostrate themselves?"
There aren't any others besides family and a few resident nobility. Servants must be respectful to officers of the guard and to upper servants, but not by dropping to the floor. Wouldn't get any work done. Tira, in answer to the distinguished doctor, how many?
Imperial Highness, I can but estimate.
Come off it, dear. You know the palace better than I do. Make a guess.
Tira couldn't come out with an instant answer the way my daughter can. I could see her lips move. Highness and doctor, approximately 120 slaves come in contact with royalty and nobility one or more times each day. The number varies because some personal servants are close at hand day and night, and some several times a day, and some may live in the palace a full cycle and never see royalty or nobility, but the very next day might be sent on an errand that would take her clear into the inner chambers of the Jadara.
I said, simple enough, Cart. Limit the curtsy to upper servants and to any habitually in close contact with your family and resident nobles. I assume that servants serving your family are your best. Oh, certainly. So make it a mark of distinction limited to those few, inner servants and supervisor servants. You'll accomplish the same time saving, and yet those few are the very ones smart enough to shift to the old way when serving visiting royalty. In addition to making it a privilege, you can use it another way. Minor punishment. If a curtsy-privileged servant slacks off or does something she knows she should not do, you can assign loss of privilege back to prostrations for a day or a 10-day or whatever the offense merits. Cart Horace grinned. Wouldn't have to whip them so often. Tira, how many times have you been whipped? Her eyes widened.
Highness, not once.
About how many whippings in the palace each 10-day? She hesitated.
Highness, none that I know of.
She's right, gentle friends. Since my father became Jeddak of Jeddaks, no servant's been whipped in this household. It is still lawful in Helium, but rare, so strong is the example of my parents. You see, well, perhaps you don't. I don't know how much of our history you know. But I, my wife, my mother, and even my father have been slaves one time or another. Complete slaves, not servants under indenture. So we know what the lash means and are too proud to use it on the helpless. Flogging for crimes not meriting death, yes, but not for peccadilloes of servants. Tira, what do you think of the proposal? Speak truth, speak my name, look me in the eye, I have spoken. Tira took a deep breath.
Cart, Horace, I think it a good proposal. It would be a source of pride, and its mirror use as a means of discipline would cause such shame that rarely it would be needed. Service would never be slack, I think, but I do not recommend it without reservations.
How so, woman? You just did recommend all of it.
I recommend that it be tried for 2 10-days. If it does not work well, you can return to the old way before your grandfather and your great-grandfather return from Okar.
Zeb chortled. She knows Murphy's Law. Tira looked startled. The prince cocked a brow. Perhaps Tira does, but I don't. What can go wrong will go wrong. So always test a process or a machine or whatever as thoroughly as possible. Then still be careful. It may turn and bite you.
Oh,
we have a similar saying. But this is a shrewd one, is Tira. She should have been born a princess, and some smart Jed may make her his princess yet. Lay his sword at her feet and marry her in full state.
Highness,
That could never happen. That's what the pilot said just before he crashed. Remember Murphy's Law, dear.
But you won't be sold. You must love him, or Mother would never consent.
Cart Horace patted her cheek, kissed her quickly, a mere peck.
Now tell me, have you been taking good care of our guests?
Highness, I have tried.
Just tried? What untrained apprentices have you been using? Let me see them. With your permission, Zeb, he added.
Certainly, Cart.
Tira clapped twice. Our girls came bursting out their side corridor as if for fire drill, lined upon the bounce, dropped in full prostration in unison. Zeb and I started patting heads. They stood up and waited.
Tira, I said, have them show a curtsy.
At once, Doctor.
Perhaps she used a hand signal. They bobbled down and up perfectly in step. Cart Horace cheered.
Again, Tira!
Tira had them do it 6 times, like clockwork. My daughter could have made a chorus line of those beauties in a fortnight. Cart Horace called a halt.
Yes, he said. I see that Tira provided raw recruits.
Tika there has been my grandfather's favorite masseuse for many cycles. Kissa and Wogi belong to Tardos Moors, and Ajal is at least nominally mine. Larlo and Laba serve my grandmother. Kona and Fig belong to my wife.
Tira, have they behaved themselves?
I interrupted.
They've all been good girls, Cart, very.
They caught the phrase, good girls, and looked pleased. Tika held my eye and dimpled. I said to Zeb,
I think we can let them go back to whatever they do when they aren't being super helpful.
Zeb agreed. Tira sent them away. Some of them looked disappointed. But I wanted to get acquainted with this young prince, and I think Zeb did, too. Cart Horace was the key to whatever we needed. What did we need? Power. Food that would keep. A carbon dioxide scavenger and air bottles, if their technology went that way. Clothes for Hilda. Shoes for her? I wasn't certain women here ever wore shoes. Could their leather workers measure Hilda's dainty feet and get her properly shod? What else? We went out onto the balcony where we had breakfasted. Tira remained in the foyer. The table where we had eaten, clear, except for 2 mugs of uncoffee minutes before, now held several sorts of wine and bowls of munching food. That balcony could not be reached from other balconies. Yet those girls had not gone past us through the great hall. I became certain that the apartment held concealed passageways, Occam's razor. Then I changed it from certainty to working hypothesis. Occam's razor was not always sharp. The prince wanted to discuss politics and economics. His father, he told us, had instituted many reforms. But each reform seemed to create a new problem knottier than the one it corrected. Cousin Zeb, doctor, don't think I'm criticizing my father. I am not. He is many, many cycles wiser than I. But the truth is, and he is the first to admit it, that the warlord is bored by administrative detail. And my beloved mother refuses to rule. She simply reigns. So I must mind the shop. I'm not complaining, but both of you have experience with a larger planet with a far larger population. You must know things I do not. The problems of Barsoom and the helium hegemony, less than half the planet, but the richest and most civilized part, were painfully easy to state. No coal, no petroleum, almost no remaining ore. no water power whatever. Some radium, uranium and rhodium, I suspect, but Cart Horus called it radium in translating a Barsoomian jawbreaker. But most radium resources were hoarded to keep the planet alive. Pumping its precious water and running an air plant that renewed the planet's thin atmosphere, whether this involved transmutation or breaking down of oxides, wasn't discussed. The air plant was the sole thing on the planet held sacred by civilized nations and barbarians alike. In the meantime, John Carter's humane reforms had resulted in more and more people. Helium was on the edge of starvation. I thought about the food that had been lavished on us, and then thought again. That food had not been thrown away. Slaves ate after their masters. Now I knew why a small royal family had over 2,000 slaves, plus Issus knew, I didn't, how many employees, guards, etc. The palace was one huge make-work welfare project. Gentlemen, our old ways, rough as they were, kept the population down to what we could feed. Now we no longer have even the river Iss as a partial solution. My father exposed it for what it was, a slaughterhouse chute of a fake religion. So now we are trying from the other end, birth control, the English phrase is, I believe, but we call it egg breaking. We've tried to make it popular. My dear mother is patroness of the greater helium egg-breaking festivals, and my wife Thuvia and I lead off every celebration by publicly breaking one of her eggs. We don't cheat. It is indeed one that she has laid, not one from a slave woman. I tell you in confidence that we have several fertile eggs in stasis, hidden in diverse places inside and outside the city. A royal family has a duty to continue its line, not leave the realm open to a power struggle. But despite the thousands of eggs destroyed every quarter cycle, our population grows, and more peasants swarm into the city. I wish you could see. No, I hope you never see this city at night. Homeless people huddled in every hole or alcove that offers any shelter, like wild thowats at night, and covered with any fur or silk they can lay hands on. Yet every morning, the black chariots remove bodies frozen at the outside of each huddle or suffocated at its core, yet still the city grows. How do you handle such problems in Virginia? Zeb was blunt. We don't. Eh? Zeb explained that Earth faced similar problems on a larger scale and had tried and was still trying analogous solutions, none of which worked. Cart, so far as I know, all you can be sure of is that an ecology always balances. Always. But the way it balances may be a disaster. Earth rebalances blindly. Every few cycles, we have a senseless war, and its only good effect, if one can call it good without vomiting, is that it thins the herd. But our wars have reached a point where many people feel that the next one may sterilize the planet, balance its ecology at zero. I don't know, I'm not that wise. But for the past century and a half, our wars have grown steadily more deadly. The only advice I can offer, stupid advice, as I don't know your planet, is to step up the egg breaking. But how, I don't know. Nor do I agreed. Zeb has painted a time picture. We aren't solving our own problems. I considered telling him about a new one. Invading aliens with green blood. Ask him if they had ever been seen on Barsoom. It would be hard for them to hide on a planet where naked bodies were as common as naked faces. The disguise Zeb had penetrated with a sword would not work on Barsoom.
but probably those aliens wouldn't bother with an almost worn-out planet. I decided to wait. Cart Horace looked glum. Well, I thought I must ask. But each must ride his own Thoat. Please don't mention this talk to my father. It might displease him. My dumping our problems in the laps of honored guests instead of entertaining them. Suddenly he grinned. Let's forget that I opened my big mouth. We still live. And while we live, let's enjoy it. Will you take a walk with me? Certainly, I agreed. But are we dressed for it? The prince looked puzzled. You are dressed as I am. Leather and sword. What more does a man need? Are there other weapons you wish to carry? You won't need them, I promise. Ornaments, if you wish. I don't bother with them at home. But you may have different tastes, Zeb said. No, I'm ready. Me too, I agreed. Then let's go. It isn't far. We went farther down the corridor, perhaps 150 meters, while Cart Horace returned salutes and answered with a word that seemed to mean at ease. I found myself saluting U.S. style, then trying to imitate Barsoomian salute, then gave up. Cart Horace paid no attention, and the guards couldn't seem to see Zeb and me at all. We turned into a side door through an empty apartment, out onto a balcony overlooking another enclosed garden. My mother's apartments are directly across from us, Cart Horace said. I'm certain Cart Horace did not intend us to look across. I looked down. Zeb let out a grunt of surprise. Occupying the middle of the garden was Gay Deceiver. We both stared. Then Zeb asked, How? Cart Horace grinned and looked very pleased. Not difficult, with enough help. You assured American Express that your sky chariot would be safe. But I knew, being a pilot myself, that if it were my flyer, I would not wish to leave it unguarded in the Bay of Blood. So our fastest class of destroyer left from Lesser Helium at the same time my wife's little yacht left here to pick you up. Your craft was under guard long before the sun went down. Thanks, Zeb answered. I didn't want to leave her out there, unguarded. But by how, I meant how did you put her here? I'm reasonably certain that even a skilled technician would have trouble opening her doors. Issus, Zeb, no one touched her doors. I would bust an officer down to recruit for that and have him flogged to boot. We simply picked her up and deposited her gently, quite gently. I supervised it. I still don't see how. There doesn't seem to be a mark on her. I'm certain there isn't. I inspected before and after. First, gardeners spent part of the night removing plants to make room once her overall size was wirelessed back. Then she was carefully measured in all dimensions, a scale model constructed on the spot by a master sculptor. Correctness checked optically, and model and all measurements flown back to the city. From these, the sling was constructed, triple silk. A swarm of tailors worked the last half of the night. Fortunately, many grommets were sewed into the sling. She turned out to be far heavier than we expected. We haven't figured out yet how she gets off the ground. Then, 32 flyers piloted as one from a 33rd, by me, he grinned again, boyishly pleased with himself. Took strains on lines of various lengths to keep the flyers clear of each other, you know, and we lifted. My best pilots were in the lifting craft. We kept the strains balanced, and lifts and turns were made as precisely as in battle. By mid-morning, we were over the palace, and Tira sent word to me that you two were still asleep, which pleased me, as you could have seen her being lowered had you been on a balcony. I do love a surprise. She was lowered below roof level. You could still have seen my flyers, but she was out of your sight. Then we placed her most cautiously on the ground, detached the lines, removed the sling, and saved it, as we will lift her out and place her on an open level field whenever you say.
Thanks, said Zeb, but it won't be necessary.
But aren't those wings?
Yes.
You must be a master pilot, cousin.
Adequate.
My captaincy is in aerospace.
Our host looked momentarily glum.
I wish I could say the same. But we haven't the metal to build even one spaceship. If I am ever to visit Earth, a prime ambition if I ever have time, it must be as a passenger, buying a ticket through Thomas Cook of American Express.
Suddenly he brightened.
But I was thinking of the Earthling liners. Perhaps we could build one the size of yours. Or could we?
Jake?
My brain raced.
Give Continua craft secrets to another planet?
When I had not turned them over to my own government as yet.
But what about two pregnant women and our need for the favor of this prince?
Call me Turncoat, or take it up with one Colonel Duggins, or wrap it in Form 1040. When we left Earth, we had done so under duress, unprotected from booby traps and atomic bombs and other deadly hazards, thrown solely on our own resources. I opted to protect our wives.
I can supply plans, Highness, by rigging a projector for microfilm.
Up to you how the projections could be copied. We don't have equipment here for that. It's also up to you to work from those plans. I haven't the slightest idea whether or not your technicians can duplicate my apparatus.
Cart, old man, I can give you specs on those gyros.
But can your people do as well as Sperry Division?
I can't.
Zeb, how about the car manual? It's not microfilmed. Or is it?
No, but it's not a problem. Project the pages, camera obscure in reverse.
The sort of picture postcard projector that was once popular. I could jury-rig one with any sort of magnifying glass.
I turned back to Cart Horace.
Cart, I won't kid you. We will turn over to you full plans with full explanations. But if you don't have the technology to use them, and at present I can't guess, you might spend a cycle of cycles on it and still be disappointed. That little ship represents the combined talent of hundreds of thousands, I don't know how many, specialized experts in many, many fields. There are items in it, many of them, that neither Zeb nor I could build. We bought them. We can explain them, give you pictures and plans for them. But we did not make them. Only the overall design is mine. I built on the shoulders of other men. Prince Cart Horace smiled and for a moment looked the way I feel that royalty, true royalty, not exiles in Ishtaril, should look.
I couldn't ask for more, Doctor.
If we fail, it's our failure. But Helium understands teamwork, too.
24. Zebediah. I didn't say much as Jake and Cart and I walked back to our apartment. We had told Cart the truth, but he didn't grasp it. We tried to tell him that duplicating Gay Deceiver on Barsoom was a nearly zero possibility, like asking the Wright brothers to build the first moon ship. I knew they had high technology. Some of it looked like magic to me, but it wasn't our technology. Take a simple pocket pen, so cheap that they are given away as advertising.
Back of it lie several sorts of chemists, metallurgists, synthetic polymer experts, mechanical engineers, extrusion presses, computer programmers, computers, computer technicians, tool makers, electrical engineers, a planet-wide petroleum industry, five or more sorts of mines with mining engineers, geologists, miners, railroads, steamships, production engineers, management specialists, merchandising psychologists, etc., to a splitting headache. It is impossible even to list the myriad special skills that underlie even the most trivial trade item of our enormously complex and interdependent industrial web. Hell, I didn't even mention power grids. Or accountants, banking systems, financiers. I left those out on purpose. I assumed that the prince could handle the money end. If not, we could not help him. Could we help him at all? Well, we could try all out and suppress our misgivings. Maybe the approach was not a monkey copy gay deceiver, but to find out whether or not even one Barsoomian mathematician could understand Jake's math and go from there. They might wind up with an inner universe's space-time craft shaped like an egg and a third the size of the gay deceiver, mostly life support and gyros. Must talk to Jake. As twinning gay deceiver could not be done off her home planet. Nor was it necessary. Continua craft didn't need wings. With accurate radar or even precise optical range finders, I could have grounded gay deceiver without unfolding her wings. She had never been intended to be a spaceship. She was a bastard. Forgive me, smart girl. Outfitted for space-time travel because she was what we had. But Kartoris could start from scratch and stick to essentials. Maybe it would work. It might even solve his population problem. Or fill those dead sea bottoms with water. Or fetch metal to Barsoom. Cheap transportation is the key to almost any economic problem. And what could be cheaper than a freighter that goes any distance in no time, or even switches universes at less than the price of a paperclip? Once you get it operating. I reached our digs feeling better. Maybe we could help our friend yet. Tira met us, curtsied.
Highness, Captain, Doctor, the princesses have returned. Out here, Cart.
Coming, Thuv. Thanks, Tira. Standing in the archway at the far end of the big room was a figure silhouetted by bright sunlight. I called out, Dee Dee, honey, I missed you.
I am flattered, senior cousin,
the silhouetted figure answered.
But I am not your princess. I am Thuvia.
And darn if she didn't curtsy to me. I hurried toward Princess Thuvia while Dee Dee called out,
I'm out here, Tarzan, and I'm flattered too.
Coming. Thuvia had her hand stuck out to shake mine. I took it, bowed deeply over it while turning it 90 degrees and kissing it, giving it a semi-Polish treatment. That is, not the all-out Warsaw invitation to better things, but not a stage actor's fake, another. Just strong enough so that she was certain her hand had been kissed. Thuvia giggled.
Gart, Mother Deja is right. He not only looks like the warlord, he acts like him too.
When did Deja Thoris get a look at me? Was this joint bugged like a Moscow hotel? Spy eyes? Spy cameras, if they had photography. I had seen no photographs. Wait a half. I had been on a balcony where Cart had said, my mother's apartments are directly across from here, but across was at least 100 meters. Binoculars? No, the timing wasn't right. Our wives and Thuvia must have left there by then, as the Jadara's quarters were 3 times as far from our apartment as that balcony we had been on, and they beat us home. I dropped it. No data. But that palace had the privacy of a zoo. I straightened up and took a better look at the princess, and saw why the silhouette had fooled me. Aside from pigmentation, Cart's wife and mine could have passed for twin sisters. Use body makeup on Dee Dee and spray her pretty hair black, and anyone would believe it. I had plenty of chance to make certain, as Princess Thuvia's costume was a jeweled belt around her wasp waist and a dagger in a matching sheath. I said, Cart, come on.
want you to meet our owners.
Wives?
Jake corrected. Is there a difference? I asked. Cart answered, well, now that you put it that way.
Careful what you say, dear,
Thuvia cautioned.
I'll tell Mother Deja.
Be a gentleman, Cart.
I want you to meet some ladies.
Neither Didi nor Sharpie stood up to meet the Prince Regent. I was proud of them. The drooling eagerness of most of my female compatriots on being exposed to royalty I do not like. We fought to get rid of kings. We insist that our presidents kiss babies and mingle with the people, then slobber over the worn-out royalty of Europe. The Royal House of Helium and other Barsoomian royalty, at least in those classic romances that appear to be more history than fiction, are the sort of royalty of our Middle Ages. They fought their way up and hold tenure by ruling wisely, or they lose both tenure and life. Jungle law, but the law of the jungle has outlasted all written law. Thuvia and Cartoris were just plain fun to have around. They accepted us as equals, slightly senior to them, but family, and that let them relax. Cart did one thing that was definitely protocol before he relaxed. After being introduced to our wives and bending over and kissing their hands somewhat awkwardly, he then unbuckled his sword and placed it at their feet, midway between them. This is, I understand, between a single man and a maid, is or can be a proposal of marriage. It did not mean that now. We all were most visibly married. So it had its other meaning. I will defend you with my life, now and forever. It is never a polite gesture. It is a blood oath to the death. I'm proud of our women. Didi was at once solemn, but she does that easily. Hilda dropped the jester's mask she wears most of the time and showed the lady and heroine underneath. Neither smiled. Both had tears in their eyes. Working together, they buckled his sword back on. Then Hilda spoke for both of them.
We thank you, Prince Cartoris. You have honored us. We will try always to justify your faith in us.
Jake caught my eye. He started fumbling at his Sam Brown as I unhooked my navy belt. Together, we laid our weapons at the feet of Princess Thuvia. She'd had more experience at this than our girls had, probably by a factor of several hundred. She stood very straight and sang,
Gentle sirs, senior cousin, learned doctor, I pray that I will ever deport myself to bring honor to your blades. I feel warmly safe knowing that they protect me. I accept their shelter and thank you for it.
And Helium thanks you, Cart rumbled. I have spoken.
Thuvia picked up our weapons, let the Sam Brown hang on her forearm while she hooked up my sword belt, then turned to Jake, figured out how it had to go, put the shoulder strap over his head and onto his shoulder, then buckled the belt. His saber had come unhooked. She fumbled a bit, while Jake quietly helped her. Then she went into his arms and gave him an all-out Didi kiss. Then it was my turn. That ended all ceremony. By then, all three women were dripping tears and Didi and Sharpie were streaking their makeup, for they were indeed made up from their toes to maybe 15 centimeters above their heads, complex hairdos studded with jewelry. Each was wearing a dagger and a jeweled belt, like Thuvia. That was just a starter. Wrist bracelets, upper arm bracelets, rings, pendants, necklaces, anklets, and things I have no names for, all crusty with gems. Didi had an emerald in her navel that should have been in the forehead of an image in some jungle temple. I don't know what held it there. A corkscrew? Self-confidence? A horseback guest says that each of our wives was wearing a couple of $100,000 new dollars in colorful doodads, plus their inestimable value on Earth as anthropological items. Maybe I underestimated. But I was a perfect little gentleman. I didn't ask why Didi and Hilda were dressed like birds of paradise. I just joined Jake in shooing everyone back onto the balcony, where the ladies had been lounging when we returned.
The table out there had been replenished with wines and snacks, but not the assortment we three men had shared half an hour before. I saw why mealtimes were vague in the palace. Lavish food was always in reach. Now and then, a pixie. Ajal, Kissa, somebody would glance out, remove anything partly emptied and replace it with fresh. With masterly deduction, I figured out that the campfire girls were holding a picnic in the room assigned to them. Cart and Thuvia are easy company. Old shoe comfortable. Cart is sober-sided except for his infectious grin, but he had heavy burdens. Thuvia had Didi's three major expressions, thoughtfully impassive, big grin, and little girl startled. But balanced differently. Thuvia grinned most of the time, talked a lot without committing herself over much, and had an easy bodiness. While she looked Didi's age, she was older than Didi, much older, and far more experienced. She kidded her husband, much as Sharpie did Jake. Didi made unexpected remarks that sounded like kidding, but were not. Didi herself was most unexpected, but Sharpie's remarks were serious only when needful. Thuvia sat on a balustrade, one knee up high with her inner leg dragging, while Didi faced her in the same pose, mirror image. I sat on a cushion where I could hand food and wine to each of them and tried not to stare too overtly at Thuvia, although she clearly didn't give a hoot. There was no body modesty on Barsoom. They didn't have the concept any more than a kitten has. They wore ornaments, they wore furs for warmth, and I understood that in the far north, furs were fashioned into full clothes for warmth. They wore weapons and sometimes body armor, but they didn't wear clothes for decency. That indecent Garden of Eden myth that corrupts our culture never took hold there. Cart stretched on his back and stared openly at Didi. I knew that Didi didn't mind. She's been a lifetime rebel against that taboo. And I didn't mind. It enriched Cart without impoverishing me. Staring is the most harmless of recreations and should be encouraged. Sharpie was stretched on her belly near Cart and fed him the way our pixies fed us, when we let them. Thuvia asked me,
"Is it really true that Earth's incredible oceans are several meters deep?"
Didi answered for me.
Several meters deep would just be a pond or a small lake. Oceans are much more than a kilometer deep, often many kilometers deep. Isis, I have trouble visualizing it. I've heard it before, but it sounded like travelers' tall tales. I must think about it in hods. A hod is about half a kilometer, Thu. I had to estimate just yesterday.
A hod is 6/10 of a kilometer, Didi, Cart put in.
Near enough. I didn't have anything to measure with. I just stood my husband up by a green friend of mine and pointed to a place on his tummy that would mark about 2 meters, knowing how tall Zebediah is. Goodness, I promised both Tommy Tucker and Catch I would get in touch today, and I haven't.
Sharpie suddenly sat up.
And so did I. Thu, how do we get in touch with American Express?
Cart answered,
"You ask Tira, but Didi, what do you need from American Express? Perhaps we have it in the palace."
"Not this, you don't. Our green friends, Cart, Tommy Tucker, Tom Talkus, and another one, Catch Catch Can."
"Tom Talkus, I know. He's a brood nephew to my godfather, General-in-Chief Tars Talkus. A good man, Tom Talkus. Conscientious. But no sense of humor."
"Look who's talking," Thuvia drawled.
"Peace, my princess. Had one once. I'll find it again. Once I get some worries cleared up. Catch, catch, can. Unusually tall, even for a green man. Heavily muscled. Scars all over him."
Sharpie answered,
"I don't know how tall green giants usually are, but that's a perfect description of Catch. He's taller than Tom Talkus, quite a bit."
"It has to be the same man, senior under-officer of the Thark Regiment of the Allied Forces stationed here, and, except for my father, the deadliest warrior on Barsoom. deadly even without weapons. I said, Tom Tarkus referred to Catch as Sergeant Major. Same rank, different use of English idiom. If Tom Tarkus is with American Express, he probably knows more English than I do. Thuv is the only member of our family who speaks it as well as my father does. Kart smiled ruefully. She learned it first, from my father. They used to joke in it, until Mother and I learned it in self-defense. But Thu uses idioms and words my mother and I haven't learned.
Yes, agreed Thuvia comfortably, including some your father says I should not use, although I learned them from hearing him use them when he was vexed. Didi, after the revolution, I'm going to work for Thomas Cook, so I'm always trying to enrich my English vocabulary. You and Hilda have enriched it today.
After the revolution, you'll be a slave, Thuv, her husband said.
Thu, put in Sharpie, I made a deal with Tommy Tucker, Tom Tarkus, to teach him impolite English in exchange for his teaching me the swear words and barracks language of soldiers here. You could join the class, if it won't make you blush. A woman who has spent many cycles as a slave of the Holy Therns forgets how to blush, Hilda.
If she ever knew, added Thuvia's husband.
Ignore my husband, Sharpie. He's a... What was that very long word? Fluxinus annihilopilificator.
Zeb has